couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies, Birds of Prey. And that's it in terms of new movies. There's also going to be the Oscar-nominated short films I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to give you my exclusive Oscar predictions for who's going to win on Sunday night. There's also going to be some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Dr. Sleep and My Bloody Valentine. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
We lost a Hollywood legend, which is Kirk Douglas. He was 103. And that is just jaw-droppingly amazing. Not a whole lot of people reach it to that age. And of course, he hasn't done any sort of acting for a while. I mean, he's living his final years out, but he was a classic actor, and of course he made a huge impact on American cinema, going back to stuff like Spartacus and Paths of Glory. And he had such a long, promising career. But it's interesting. I said to my father, he's 82 and he had a stroke and I take care of him. And so I was over there talking to him and I was telling him, did you hear Kirk Douglas died? He goes, yeah. I go, he was 21 years older than you, Dad. And my dad just kind of looked at me and he goes, I don't know if I'm going to make that. And I said, well, here's the thing. If you stick around for another 21 years, I'm going to be 69. Somebody's going to be taking care of me maybe at that age. So to put that in perspective, his son, Michael Douglas, who was born when Kirk Douglas was in his 20s, Michael Douglas is 75 and he's the younger one. I mean, these people are basically like British royalty at this point. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that's a good run. 103 years old, that's a good run. There's nothing you can say to disparage somebody who makes it that far. So, Godspeed, Kirk Douglas. You will be missed, and your legacy will live on. The next piece of news I want to hit really quickly is, we all heard the news a couple weeks ago that Scott Derrickson was bowing out of the Doctor Strange 2. Derrickson comes from horror. He had comes from a horror background, and while the mystical stuff is a little more fantasy, there's a certain grounding in horror elements to the Doctor Strange character. Well, now it's come out that Sam Raimi is being courted to direct it, which I think would be fantastic. Now, of course, Sam Raimi has a long history with superhero movies. Back in the 80s, he was looked at for a possible director for Batman back in 1989. He didn't get it. It went to Tim Burton, another person who has horror movie roots. But Sam Raimi ended up doing Darkman, which was his own version of Batman back in 1990. And then in 2002, he was given the reins to the Spider-Man franchise. And while he kind of got run into the ground with Spider-Man 3 and he was done with that, it's always been clear that Sam Raimi has had a comic book level of style to his films. So I think it's fantastic that we're going to get, hopefully, a Doctor Strange movie. And I think the way Raimi's mind works and his virtual visual camera style works, I think we can do some really interesting stuff. I am now looking very much forward to Doctor Strange 2, and I love the fact that it's going somewhere completely away from what you would expect mainstream comic book movies to be. So I am very excited that Sam Raimi will hopefully be taking on the director reins for Doctor Strange 2. The final piece of news is a little bit of cautionary tale for people, and this is just more or less a human interest story that's kind of popped up. Apparently what happened is there was a school that did a fundraiser, and the way they raised money is they showed the movie The Lion King. And Disney came to them and said, hey, you owe us a certain percentage of that because you did not get permission to show our movie. And there are people that are stomping their feet and swinging their arms going, oh, how dare Disney go after just a school? Well, here's the thing. Every single DVD that I've ever watched, they usually have that FBI warning thing that says this is for private home use. Any public performance of it is not authorized. You can get that. You can get an authorized private performers. You can rent a movie theater and show The Lion King, but you have to get permission from Disney first. Otherwise, you're liable to pay them part of your door. That's how they protect their identity. I think the only reason they went after this, because you can, in schools all the time, they'll just show, like, if they're at the end of exam week or they, for whatever reason, they don't have a curriculum that day, it is not uncommon to show a movie. And in general, I don't think Disney cares if all you're doing is popping in Frozen 2 on recess one day when it's the inclement weather and you can't go outside. But if you're raising money, because as I understand it, this was a fundraiser. If you're specifically raising money, you're using that Disney property to raise that money, and Disney has a right to some of that. And you may sit there and think, oh, the Mouse House is this big behemoth monster. That's their property. And, you know, don't advertise it that way if you don't want to get caught. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit actually aired on the Super Bowl. I'm not going to do a rundown of Super Bowl commercials because a lot of them we've already seen. We've seen Black Widow. We've seen the Mulan trailer. I'm going to hit for the one that is actually, well, it premiered before the Super Bowl, but it ended up playing at the Super Bowl. And that's Fast and Furious 9, which opens on May 22nd.
No matter how fast you are, no one outruns their past. And mine just caught up to me.
Been a long time, Dom.
So we're up against a master thief, assassin, high performance driver. Who is he?
Jacob is Dom's brother.
I have come to accept the Fast and Furious movies. I've come to accept the fact that they're almost 20 years old. I've come to accept the fact that they have no bearing whatsoever on the first two or three. The first two or three are very different than everything that comes after it. Everything that comes after it is kind of international spy stuff. They've turned into this mega cast multicultural James Bond roadster event. And that's part of the fun of them, is they're absurd and they're ridiculous. They don't have any bearings on the first movie that was based on an article written in a magazine about people doing street racing and boosting VCRs. So I find them fun, but as much as they stretch the bounds of reality with their stunts, they stretch the bounds of reality with their stories at this point, where it's like, oh, Dom has a brother now that no one's ever mentioned over eight other movies. It just seems a little silly, but which is fine. But I would just wish, that's one of the things I like about the James Bond movies, is like, oh, well, here's your next assignment. We don't have to explain why something's, you just have to do it because you're being told. But it looks like it's going to be another, exactly what you expect from a Fast and Furious movie. Big action that's absurd and ridiculous, you know, kind of fun. The next one I want to hit is Minions, The Rise of Gru. They teased the trailer at the Super Bowl, but this dropped this week, and it opens on July 3rd.
This is the biggest day of my life! This kid just stole something from the worst villains in the world! Yeah! Time to strike! Now I will be
a super villain! Now all I need is Otto. Where is Otto? Are you pulling on my legs right now? Did you just trade my future for a pet rock?
I think we've gotten to the point where we've blurred the line between Minions and Despicable Me, because Gru's a character in this, but it's a Minions movie, not a Despicable Me. It's not like Despicable Me the prequel, even though that's really what it is. It's about Gru becoming despicable. Because I think if I recall, in the first Minions, at the end, they run into Gru. But now it's them with Gru kind of growing together. Look, this looks like it's maybe pushing a little bit more. It's shoehorning it into the Gru storyline. It looks like it might be fun, but I get a greater feeling of Despicable Me 2 than I do of the original Despicable Me. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Birds of Prey and the Oscar shorts.
Kids.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. And not a whole lot of movies this week because there just isn't a whole lot opening. Generally, Hollywood does not open many movies that they want to do well either on Super Bowl weekend, which was last weekend, and that was a flop, or on the weekend of the Oscars. And usually if you're going to have a movie and they come out on Oscar weekend, it's usually a movie that normally wouldn't be nominated for an Oscar. And there's not a whole lot of them that come out that weekend. But they do have a movie out this weekend, and that is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. That's the actual full title of the movie. Well, I think the reason they put that subtitle in there is to highlight the fact that Harley Quinn is in the movie. And it's her movie. Margot Robbie stars as off-kilter ex-girlfriend of the Joker, who bands with other women in Gotham to save a girl from a gangster.
This all started when the Joker and I broke up. It was completely mutual.
Oh, so quiet.
Now that I cut ties with Mr. J, I'm about to learn that a lot of people want me dead.
And so peaceful.
But it turns out I wasn't the only dame in Gotham looking for emancipation.
You fall in love.
There was originally going to be a Harley Quinn spinoff, and I think that turned into Birds of Prey because they brought in some other characters from the DC universe, like the Huntress and Black Canary, which are the Birds of Prey is an actual character group that is in the Batman universe. The big difference is that this is rated R. Much like Suicide Squad, it feels that grittiness of it. Do not take your 5-year-old to see this movie and think, oh, it's based on a Batman comic. You're going to have an R, or do, and deal with the consequences. This has violence and language and inappropriate situations and sexual. I don't think there's too many sexual situations, but there's sexual jokes and comments, and it's R-rated. I mean, it's bona fide R. It's not just R-rated because they drop an F-bomb here now and then. It's full on R-rated. The movie hinges on Margot Robbie and her character of Harley Quinn, which she is fantastic in. And if you recall, in Suicide Squad, she was the only thing that made that movie bearable. Everyone else was awful. She was great, and she's equally great in this movie. Margot Robbie isn't just beautiful and fun to look at, and she is, don't get me wrong. But in some ways, her beauty is a little bit of a hindrance because she's so gorgeous, she's not accessible to the average person. But because she is so good at acting, she can cut through that noise. And she is warm and inviting and clever and cute and adorable in this movie, even though she's a psychotic, crazy woman in this film. And she carries the whole movie, and most of it is her movie. The Birds of Prey, the other characters, are kind of wandering around, and they don't coalesce until right at the end, where it gets a little bit silly. But it's unnecessary. It should all just be her movie. When she's not on screen, though, the movie falls apart. She's completely boring. And there was another movie, and I was kept trying to remember which one it was, because I kept asking my my family. I said this about another movie. I can't remember what other movie it was recently. But when she's not on screen, the movie is kind of unwatchable. But when she's back on screen, then it's wonderful and fun again. It all hinges on her. She is deserving of every praise of the movie because she is what makes a movie work. And Margot Robbie is what makes it an enjoyable movie and a fun film. It's just, there are a couple moments where she's not in the movie for a little bit that you just got to deal with. But otherwise, then she comes back and it's a lot of fun again. So I'm going to have to say, because of her, and strictly because of her, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the Oscar nominated shorts. I love short films, and I love the Oscar nominated shorts because every year Shorts TV does a presentation of all the short films, and they do 3 different blocks, very much like a film festival. And they're all about 1.5 to 2 hours, and they do animated, documentary, and live action. Now, I have not seen the documentary ones because they do take a little bit longer. I didn't get around to it. These are the ones that are usually the most heady. These are the ones that are going to be the heaviest ones to watch. They're usually involving some sort of social issue or you know, like a international issue. I mean, one of them, the one that's currently winning on the audience votes is learning to skateboard in a war zone. It's from the UK, but there's a lot of stuff that is dealing with some heady issues. I'm sure that if you like that deep, thick, heavy, emotionally driven theme and issue driven filmmaking, you're going to get that in the documentary. And these are ones that are real works of passion. Documentaries alone, feature documentaries tend not to make much money, but the fact that short documentaries don't make any money, and it's great to see filmmaking actually still being done in this. So they are good to watch. Now, I tend to lean a little bit more towards the entertainment side. Now, the live action ones, they've got five of them. The one that's currently winning is this one called Saria, which in terms of this audience vote, which I think this is probably going to win the Oscar. It's about a Guatemalan orphanage where there was great abuses going on. And, you know, it only happened a couple of years ago. And it's a true story. It's a real focus on, you know, women's rights and the protection of girls and, what can happen in a power, corrupted position. There's other ones on there. My own personal favorite is one called A Sister, which is from Belgium, is about a woman who's been kidnapped on the phone with a 911 operator trying to, identify where she is so that she can get help. But there's one about a brother joining a radical military in Tunisia. There's one about kids swerving into drug deals. That's a French one. And then there's one from the U.S. about called The Neighbor's Window, where these people are seeing this couple across the way and sort of like they never meet each other, but their lives are on display because their windows face each other. So those are really interesting ones. They're a little heavier than normal. There's not as many whimsical shorts, especially in the live action. Even in the animation. Now, the animation block, I love animation. It's one of my favorite things in the world. They oftentimes tend to be a little more fun and a little more whimsical. And there are two of them in there. One's called Hair Love, which a lot of people actually saw because I think it was released along with The Secret Life of Pets 2. And it's about this African-American father trying to deal with his daughter's hair because he doesn't know how to do it. And it's a really cute thing because it's a family-oriented one. And there's one called Kit Bull, which is about this kitten and a pit bull that become good friends. Then there's a little more heavier stuff in the animation and some weird animation using stop motion. There's one called Sister from China, and it's about a boy contemplating the existence of his younger sister. There's one called Daughter, which is my personal favorite, and it comes from the Czech Republic, and it's about a woman who has grown up and her father's ill, and it's her flashing back in a very surreal way about their life together. And then finally, Memorable, which is from France, is about a man who is suffering from dementia. But they're heavier, this one. I mean, you only have the two whimsical ones, but these are always unique. You'll see nothing like them ever again in the theaters for the rest of the year. But you can also go to shorts.tv. You can go to anywhere that you stream stuff like YouTube or iTunes or Amazon Prime, and you can usually rent them. In general, the entire shorts totally rocks. It's worth seeing. Even if you don't like them, there's something different than what you're going to see out there.
It rocks.
Excellent. Yay!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about my Oscar predictions, which you can put money on and then send me any profits, or you can lose the money and I'm not paying you anything. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. No more movie reviews right now, but we're going to be talking about the Oscars. Of course, the Academy Awards are this Sunday. Part of the problem with award ceremonies now is they're long. They're like 3 hours long, and there's so many other options to do things now. Even though it's the winter, even though it's February, even though it's probably snowing in half of the country, you can watch other TV shows, you can stream stuff, you can go on the internet, you can play a game, you can goof around on your phone. When I was a kid, you had to watch the ceremony. And so this whole business about saying, oh, well, you know, there's no host this year. Who cares? Who cares if there's no host? There wasn't a host last year and it was fine. You still had an announcer. You need an announcer more than you need a host. You still had famous people getting up and giving awards, but the host was just there to put bits in the middle. And now we don't have to worry about selfies of people in the audience. Nothing against Ellen DeGeneres, but, you know, the epic selfie. Hasn't that played itself out? We don't have to worry about Jimmy Kimmel taking Wonder Woman next door to a movie theater to shoot out t-shirts from a t-shirt gun. You don't have to worry about the bits. You don't have to worry about the big show-stopping number at the beginning that Billy Crystal's going to sing. I kind of like the idea of not having a host, because then it becomes all about the host. Get on to the awards. And I'd say they should make the award shows an hour long, maybe give somebody like Chris Rock or Ricky Gervais 15 minutes in the middle to do stand-up and just like, destroy the crowd. Don't approve any of it. But they don't listen to me. Anyways, I want to talk about my picks for the Oscars. Who's going to win each award? Now, the first group of awards is the acting awards I want to talk about. And I think that the acting awards in most parts are sewn up. They've been sewn up for weeks. They've gotten the same people winning the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice and the SAG Awards. I think that they're all going to fall down in the same category. So in that sense, I think actor in a leading role is going to go to Joaquin Phoenix for Joker. I mean, it just makes sense. He was phenomenal in that movie. And one of the things I always look for, the things that tend to edge people into the winner's circle for the Oscars is, at least in acting, is a transformative performance. I talked about that with Gary Oldman when he won Best Actor for The Darkest Hour. I mean, that was a transformative performance. I think that Christian Bale was very close to winning for a transformative performance as Dick Cheney, but I think he kind of messed around in some of the things he said in his, I think it was his Golden Globe, his acceptance speech, that rubbed people the wrong way, and they said, we don't want the controversy of this going and predominating the Oscars, so it kind of harmed him. But generally, if you have one of those roles that just transforms you, it's a big deal, and I think that's what happens with Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, I thought Jonathan Pryce was wonderful in The Two Popes. Leonardo DiCaprio did some of the best acting he's done in a while in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Adam Driver really throws down for Marriage Story, and then, of course, Antonio Banderas. I think fewer people have seen Pain and Glory. But it's just, you can't hold a candle to Joaquin Phoenix's performance. So he's going to win for Best Actor. I think for Best Actress, similarly, I think it's going to be Renee Zellweger. Again, it's a transformative performance. She does not remind me at all of Judy Garland, yet she did a fantastic job as Judy. And the movie Judy's not really that great. It's okay, but it's not great. But her performance is. Of course, you know, Scarlett Johansson did a great job in Marriage Story. Charlize Theron, again, here's another transformative performance, but I don't think it was as strong as Renee Zellweger playing Judy Garland. I mean, I think if there's anyone sort of in second place, it's going to be Charlize Theron, because she was fantastic in Bombshell, but still, it was just, she just got edged out a little bit. Cynthia Erivo, I wasn't a big fan of Harriet, and Saoirse Ronan for Little Women. I think it was kind of a very typical, almost phoned-in performance for her. I didn't feel the power behind that performance. I still think it's going to be Renee Zellweger for Judy. Now, when it comes to supporting actor, I think that this one I would love to see. It's not going to happen, but I would love to see The Irishman pick something up. But I think Al Pacino and Joe Pesci are going to be splitting the vote. I think Tom Hanks, in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, he was fantastic in it, but nobody's racing to give him another Oscar. He's won a couple, and it's not like, oh, he's going to have his last chance. No. I think it was a good performance, but it's not one that's making people stand up. And as good as Anthony Hopkins was in The Two Popes, I really think it's going to be Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I have a friend in radio who said that she thinks it's just because people want to see him do his acceptance speech. So I think that that's very possible. In terms of actors in a supporting role, I think Florence Pugh for Little Women or Scarlett Johansson for Jojo Rabbit should win. I also thought Margot Robbie was great in Bombshell, and Kathy Bates was great in Richard Jewell. It was nice to see her get a nomination there. But really, I think this is the one I think has been sewn up just as much as Joaquin Phoenix. Laura Dern from Marriage Story, even though I didn't particularly like her or her character in Marriage Story, it's the one that's winning all the awards. So those four awards are all sewn up. I do not see a change in those. I can't imagine there being very much of a shakeup in that. Now, the big ones are Best Picture, Best Director. Now, there's a couple things going on this year. First of all, as we do with every year, there's more pictures nominated than directors. And of course, everybody's losing their mind over the fact that Little Women didn't get nominated for Best Director, so Greta Gerwig is going to have to go home without a statuette for that. But I think one of the other things that's happening is the run of movies in Best Picture, there's stuff that's got seen. There's stuff that people have watched. Either they've watched it on the Netflix, and I know that The Irishman got a lot of play on Netflix, and I think Marriage Story got a decent amount as well. But there's also movies that made money, that were big hits. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 1917, and Ford versus Ferrari. Those were all, you know, they didn't make $500 million, but they're money-making movies. You're not going to get one of these think pieces this year where they're like, oh, the nominees are movies that nobody's seen. There's a lot of movies that have seen. Now, maybe more people should have seen Jojo Rabbit than did, but I certainly think that they're representing at least a segment of mainstream tastes this year. Now, one of the things I always do when it comes to my predictions, and I'm going to let you in on a little secret, it's always possible for them to split. You have a Best Picture and Best Director be different movies. And I think that that's going to happen this year. I like to predict that because then if it comes true, I look like an absolute genius. It's part of the way I operate. Now, when it comes to Best Picture, I think all the momentum's being thrown behind 1917. And that's okay. 1917's a great movie. But I think that it's one of those that it was just a perfect storm of buzz and hype and box office. And all of it's happened in 2020. You can plan for this, but sometimes it fails, like what happened with Just Mercy. That thing just kind of fizzled. But this one just happened to hit all the right beats. It won the Golden Globe, and then it came out, and it did well. And it's just kind of timed out really perfectly, and it's gotten this big momentous push going towards the ceremony, as opposed to saying Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which came out in the summer of last year and burned up a lot of its buzz early. So I think 1917 is going to win Best Picture, but I think the Academy wants to give an award to Parasite. It fits the narrative of diversity. It shows a movie that was normally would be relegated to just foreign film that's shown up in multiple categories. So I really think that Bong Joon-ho is going to win Best Director for Parasite, but it's going to be a split. And that's why the Best Picture is ultimately still going to go to 1917. And those are my predictions for the Oscars. You can, again, bet on them all you want. Send me any money you make on it. But I am not responsible for any sort of money lost on betting on my picks because it's your money. And if you're going to bet, that's your thing. But I expect a little bit of payment. The address is on the website. Go check it out. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Dr. Sleep and My Bloody Valentine. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for our final segment in which we are going to be talking about the box office. Actually, you know what? I want to read a listener email. I didn't have time to do it in the news segment, but I think it's worth pointing out. This comes from John, and he talks about last week I was talking about horror movies getting musicals made, and I'm waiting for them to do, like, you know, something extreme. Like a Human Centipede, the musical, or a Serbian film, the musical. But he said, from your last podcast, for my 41st birthday, which was 9 years ago, my wife took me to see Evil Dead, the musical. He said it was a fun time. He said, then he got this Groupon they're expanding Evil Dead the Musical. That's still going on. It's actually playing in Linkin Park, Chicago right now. And the tickets look like they're, you know, $20 to $30, which is not a bad deal for this. I think it goes through February. These musicals do well. And like I said, Reanimator the Musical, I know that came out and people are getting some buzz about that. And I actually, there's a Twitter account for Evil Dead the Musical. I know everybody's doing it. They did Carrie the Musical. My son was just in a regional performance of Carrie the Musical. And he's in a musical for Heathers, which is hysterical because they couldn't allow Heathers, the TV show, be made. But there's a musical version of Heathers floating all over the place being performed in regional theater. So, you know, this whole, well, you could never do that again, all depends on what your audience is and what it's being put out there. So, hey, you know what? Go up and see Evil Dead the Musical. Hopefully it's as good as the first time you saw it, John. Thanks for the feedback, for sure. But let's talk now about the box office. And last weekend, what a miserable weekend it was at the box office. I mean, almost embarrassing. Bad Boys for Life still took the top spot with just over 17 million. And of course, 1917 is still doing quite well with under 10 million. Dr. Doolittle did fine. Gretel and Hansel made over 6 million in place four. And the rhythm section, which I literally asked, there's a friend of mine, he lives in New York, Ed Douglas. He does the Weekend Warrior stuff and he's written a box office report for various outlets over the years. And I asked him, should I go see the Rhythm Section or Gretel and Hansel, which is going to be the bigger movie? And he's like, probably the Rhythm Section because of Blake Lively and she has certain star power. It made $2.7 million for the entire weekend, came in 10th. It made less than half of what Gretel and Hansel made, which came in 4th. But it was a miserable weekend for movies. They did not do well. I mean, the stuff that was topping the box office, like Bad Boys for Life and 1917 and even Dr. Doolittle, and even like stuff like Jumanji, anything that had already been out, suffered a very small drop, less than 50% for most of the movies. But it's not a big movie weekend, so it's not really worth talking about. But let's look ahead to this weekend. It's going to be Birds of Prey. Obviously, he's going to win the weekend. And then we're going to start running into bigger releases. You've got No Time to Die showing up soon, and they're kicking off summer early again in April this year. I mean, you know, hopefully Punxsutawney Phil was correct that there's going to be a short winter because we got the summer movies coming out, and we don't want it snowing when they're going to be the big releases. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to talk about is Dr. Sleep, which is new on DVD and Blu-ray this week. And you could get it on demand for the last couple of weeks. It's usually what happens. There's like a 2-week window of on demand. But now Dr. Sleep is available on disc. Mike Flanagan directs Stephen King's sequel to his classic book, The Shining, in which a grown-up Danny Torrance helps a young teenager who is being targeted by a death cult.
You're magic, like me.
I only met 2 or 3 people like us. They died. When I was a kid, I bumped into these things. Know about magic. I always called it The Shining.
What was interesting is I was excited to see this movie, and then I was a little disappointed with it. And I think part of the thing is Mike Flanagan's directing is not Stanley Kubrick. And I don't know how you could ever match that, even if you had somebody who was a Kubrick imitator. It was kind of a losing battle for Mike Flanagan to define himself with this movie because unless you did what Kubrick did, you're not even going to be able to hold a candle to The Shining. But at the same time, only Kubrick could do what Kubrick did. If Flanagan tried to do a Kubrick movie, it would have ended up as this pretentious piece of garbage. So I think he went to the spirit of King's book. And that's what makes this movie work. And once you know that The Overlook is not throughout the whole movie, that there's basically this entire movie before they even try to go back to The Overlook. Then you understand, okay, I'm watching this story and they're just drawn to that location. The other thing I got used to is the fact so many times in movies they digitally put in the older cast back in there. They don't digitally recreate Jack Nicholson or Shelley Duvall or even Scatman Crothers. They get lookalikes. And I think that's fine. I that's absolutely fine. It's just you're so used to it being done digitally that it's a little bit different. The best part about this though is that the Blu-ray comes with the director's cut. And I believe you can get the director's cut also online, if you want to stream it. And the reason the director's cut's worth seeing is it's a better movie. And I didn't go through and do a one-on-one comparison. I didn't rewatch the theatrical cut, but as I was watching the director's cut, I didn't feel like there was any giant sequence that was missing. Like sometimes you see a new director's cut and it's got 15 minutes missing and there's this 15-minute scene that changes everything. There's maybe one or two scenes that I don't remember from the original, but it's just more, they added a little bit more breathing room to it. They added a couple bits more to scenes. They just didn't compress it as much. And that way you don't have your, what might've felt a little rushed or truncated, the theatrical cut, which would be a half hour shorter, but the director's cut really works. I felt more satisfied watching the director's cut. Maybe I had more realistic expectations. I don't know, but I really feel like this 3-hour version of Dr. Sleep works. It's a long haul and it's a slow burn, but it absolutely works. And I mean, if you get the Blu-ray, you also get the special features. One of the things that you can watch is it's called From Shining to Sleep, and it has Flanagan and King talking about making the book and the movie and making it consistent with The Shining, which of course King is famous for hating. There's also a making of Dr. Sleep, A New Vision, and then A Return to the Overlook in terms of featurettes. So not loaded with special features, but the fact that you get that director's cut and the theatrical cut and that interview featurette with Flanagan and King talking about merging both the movie and the book into a cohesive sequel when they were in such different ends of the room, I find quite interesting. So I'm going to have to say the Dr. Sleep Blu-ray is totally worth checking out. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I want to finish up with one more review, and that is for My Bloody Valentine. And I'm doing this because Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and why not do something romantic? This is the original 1981 version. A mining town in Canada faces a return of a Valentine's Day killer every year.
It's a bad time. This time of year.
The first Valentine's dance in 20 years has to be something special.
In this town on Valentine's Day, everybody loses their heart.
Roses are red, violets are blue. One is dead, and so are you.
This, of course, came out right during that early 80s slasher craze. And you had this whole series of stuff that wasn't just slasher movies, but were like calendar slasher movies. You had Happy Birthday to Me. You had April Fool's Day. You had Prom Night. You had all these that were tied to special dates on the calendar, but they were just cranking them out like crazy. I mean, I don't know how many slasher movies there were within, 1980 to 1985, but there were a lot. And I'm a great fan of movies from the 80s, even if they're corny. This one's cheesy. It's Canadian. So it sort of bucks that idea that Canadians are overly nice sometimes because, of course, it's a serial killer, but it has a very slightly different sensibility to it because it's for the Canadians. It's made by the Canadians and it's less Hollywood, but it's a cheesy, gory slasher movie that I love watching on Valentine's Day to help celebrate the season. My wife doesn't watch it, so I have to, wait till we do our Valentine's Day stuff and then catch it later. But it's still a lot of fun. I got to say, My Bloody Valentine, the original 1981 version, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also this week on Blu-ray and DVD, we have Last Christmas, which I'm not even going to talk about until next Christmas. Why am I going to talk about a Christmas movie in February? Come on, people. And that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Sonic the Hedgehog and Fantasy Island. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.